Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Big things are happening in Cleveland, and I'm not just talking about Evan Mobley. I'm talking about the big lineup. And joining me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm feeling big, man. I'm feeling good. It's it was a hell of a Bulls game. I think that obviously Cavs didn't come home with a win, but you know, in terms of like stuff you want to see in a preseason game, I mean, you said to me last night that it was the most fun you've had watching Cavs since the Spurs game. And man, it really was quite a bit of fun.
Yeah, it really was like the perfect preseason game because you got the flashes that you'd want to see. Things are a little weird. It's always going to be weird in preseason. You're going to get unusual lineups. You're going to get experimentation with who's out there on the floor. But it was such a fun game. And for the Chicago Bulls to be playing basically four of their starting five, assuming Patrick Williams starts once he's back, each of them played over 30 minutes and the Cavs managed to stay competitive. Now, I would not read into that in any way, shape, or form the same way I wouldn't read into the Cavs blowout loss to the Bulls because weird things happen in preseason. Guys aren't always trying their hardest, but it was nice to see that the Cavs defense kind of gave the Bulls reason to pause at times compared to how things went last game. It was nice to see Evan Mobley be more assertive. Lauri Markkanen having a good game instead of whatever happened in Chicago, which was a real rough game for him. It was just a really, really encouraging, fun game with a lot of moments that stand out.
And let's not bury the lead here. I mean, it was Evan Mobley's the most effective he's looked as a pro. Yeah. I think by a good margin. I mean, he was really, really impactful in that second half. And I didn't actually think he had a very good start to the game. I thought he was just okay there.
Interesting.
And then it was just like, whoa, this guy is like absolutely taking over the game, scoring the basketball, dishing the basketball, being a defensive force. And like, man, he like, you know, again, I don't think he was bad in the first half, in the first quarter. I thought he was just okay. But then, you know, he just really leveled up. And I thought he really changed the game when the Cavs were going on those runs.
Recording in progress.
Yeah, I completely agree. And for me, primarily what I'm always looking at is how he's doing on the defensive end, because that's where he's really going to have the most impact on the game, is with his ability to be versatile, with his ability to make those three big lineups work. Like that's what really stands out to me. And I hate admitting when you're right, Carter. And ultimately, like, it's still preseason. We're going to kind of figure things out. But Lauri Markkanen and Kevin Love make sense when it's out there with Evan Mobley. The three big lineup really does seem more viable when you have someone with the versatility on both ends of the floor.
A dude who can defend the three and the four and kind of bother the lane at the same time is a pretty rare skill set. And plus, I don't want to underrate the effort Lauri and Love are given. You know, especially Lauri. The thing about Markkanen that's always kind of befuddled me is that he's not as bad of an athlete as you'd think. Yeah. He can move, especially in a straight line, less laterally. But straight line speed, when you're that tall and can just play as a trailer, like, should have led to him being a better defensive player than he's been so far in his career. And I'm not saying he's going to be a great defensive player or even a good one. But, like, when you have all that length out there, you know, his margin for error is certainly better than it has been.
Yeah.
When he's got a guy like Mobley out there.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And like, he's got active hands. The thing is, it doesn't seem like he's the quickest lateral guy, but he's someone that at least has a strong upper body. He's able to get into passing lanes to get some steals. I mean, three blocks, two steals against Chicago. That's really great. It's nice to see him at least be active. Like, we know if he's out there with Kevin Love, or if he's out there in general, let's say with the Sexland guards, you know that there's going to be some areas that opposing offense defenses can exploit, that they can go after them in those ways. But if he and Kevin Love are at least going to be active, if they're going to move their feet and really compete on the defensive end of the floor, it's going to mitigate some of that. It's going to make it more feasible to get them minutes, because ultimately, like, if Kevin Love keeps looking good and if he's invested and really competing out there, you're going to have to find ways to get him minutes as long as he's on the roster. And if Laurie is playing this way, where it's not, hey, I'm going to try to post up from 18 feet. It's more, I'm going to be active off ball, both as a someone coming off of curls and looking to hunt those spot up shots, as well as attacking the basket. Like the fact he blew by DeMar DeRozan was fun, but I liked the.
I mean,
the
he's play been a really good cutter too. That's kind of been where I've seen it from him the most.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that was one of the things we mentioned after the trade, was that the tracking stats actually had him as one of the better cutters in the league. I believe he was like 92nd percentile in terms of finishing off of cuts. So the fact that he's starting to be used more in those ways, I think, is really encouraging. And the other thing that was really encouraging overall was just the amount of off-ball movement that there was against Chicago. Like, I don't think it's necessarily a surprise that after the first couple games, you go from guys kind of figuring things out, getting back into shape, allowing Evan Mobley to get a little comfortable to adjust to the speed of the NBA. But now that he has, he can go out there and like facilitate from the elbow, facilitate it from the high post. They're adding wrinkles and they're adding things as the preseason progresses, which is a really, really encouraging sight.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was Rubio who like mentioned, maybe it was after the game or before the game. I don't remember. I'm not a doctor. But he mentioned that like Mobley has just grown so much, so fast. And it's been really encouraging to see like the extent to which he's been growing as a player. And you know, I do think I'm feeling those improvements. I'm feeling these guys getting a little more comfortable with each other. And yeah, it feels good, man. It just feels good to kind of see the way that this team's starting to figure out how to play together. You know, especially considering just how hideous the offense was the first game, you know, seven quarters. I mean, it wasn't even that good against Atlanta. They just played better defense. And, you know, it's just fun figuring these guys how to play together. I will say, I feel like no one is talking about the best play of the night from Mobley, which was the pick and roll lob to Laurie. I mean, this dude ran an elbow pick and roll and immediately put a perfect lob on the line for Laurie after the slip. That is going to be so hard for defenders to guard. If he has that in his back pocket, and like it just that I feel like that's, I don't know what I'm trying to get to, but you know, to some extent it's this, like Mobley is going to be fine if he makes crazy defensive plays, if he finishes lobs, and is, you know, just a solid helpful role player.
Mm-hmm.
He will be a star if he can consistently run elbow pick and rolls with his fellow big men, and inverted right. pick and rolls with his guards, and attack in the full court. Like those are those differentiator plays that you just don't get to see very often from players. And like, that's why I'm so hype on that one play. Like, yeah, it wasn't like the craziest lob in the world, but like the indicator of like, there are almost no players who can make that play in the league right now at his size. And that's why I'm kind of fixating on it, because it's so exciting.
Yeah, and there were two other plays that stood out similar to those, where he found Lamar Stevens under the basket. He also found Okoro under the basket, creating good opportunities off of their cutting and that off-ball movement. And that's going to be so important, because we talked about the need for Isaac Okoro to go out there and do more offensively. And obviously, him getting the ball in his hands helps, but I didn't even feel like him having the ball in his hands was necessarily where he really excelled against Chicago. I thought it was more him being active off ball, finding those cutting lanes, and
well, that's where he's going to be. And yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Sorry, Go ahead. Continue. Yeah. I cut you off just to agree with you.
I was going to say, certainly Mobley operating in the high post helps create those opportunities. Because the funny thing about the starting lineup, I saw some people say, well, now you have Laurie out there, so there's a spacing three. There's more room to operate. Really, you were exchanging two shooters in Garland and Sexton for one, because Ricky Rubio isn't hitting any threes. He's not shooting well. And Laurie Markkanen, obviously, he can shoot, but you still have four non-shooters in the lineup. The difference was that activity off of the ball, the back screens, the cuts, the just weak side action to free guys up. Like, there was just more of that, and that's what it's going to need to be. Because yes, there's going to be growing pains with this starting lineup, but these are the guys that you're heavily invested in, and whether getting Okoro some more on-ball reps with the starting lineup, like, even if that means Garland has to play off-ball at times, that's still a valuable skill, because he's going to be playing a lot with Ricky Rubio. Like, it's important for these guys to figure things out and to do more than just standing around when they're running pick and roll with the bigs. Like, I do think that there were things in this game, ways that they got guys open, ways that they created movement and spacing even without spacers on the floor, that can be replicated when they do have everybody in the lineup.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree more. The Okoro thing does feel like a bit of an elephant in the room right now. I thought he was better against Chicago in that second matchup. I don't think he's been good thus far, though. It's still a challenge for him right now to find his place. Do you think it is as simple as just getting him the ball a little bit and just forcing some engagement? Or I'm a little worried that could be counterproductive to the larger offense. I'm not quite sure what to do with Okoro right now.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be a feeling out process. Like, I think you have to stick with it for a while. Like, I know on the last podcast, I theorized, hey, maybe if it continues this way, you might have to try to get a spacer in there, whether it's Dylan Windler, who's looked good. I thought Jetty Osman looked pretty good for the majority of the game. Things kind of fell apart later, but I mean, ultimately, the story of
Jetty's last couple seasons is
right.
Bursts of but, really looking great, and then just like, two, three plays where you go,
And the funny thing is, like, we talk about, for the amount of focus that goes to the starting lineup they used against Chicago played 5 minutes together total. The other starting lineup from the other games plays an average of 9 minutes a night together. Like, even with a game that they played a lot against Atlanta, like, there's going to be a lot of mixing and matching, and we probably should focus on kind of the rotations beyond just the starting lineup. But I think for the time being, you want to try to get Okoro as many reps with these guys as possible, because I think it's going to be good for everybody's development. And the reality is, like, the offense is going to be uneven for the Cavs this season. They're so young. You're going to have struggles. You're going to have droughts. You're going to have moments where it doesn't work. But having a very good defense kind of increases your margin for error. You might be able to get more points in transition. You're able to get some stops. You're able to buy yourself opportunities to figure it out throughout the game before it gets out of hand. So I do think that at least for like the first month or two of the season, I'd like to continue riding it out with this starting lineup. And JB Bickerstaff owned up to it. Like he said, it's on the coaching staff to find ways to get Okoro more involved with that starting five. And I mean, geez, look how many teams have multiple playmakers on the perimeter. You can find ways to get him reps with the ball in his hands within that lineup. It just means making sure that everybody is active, that there is that off-ball movement, because it's going to generate opportunities for everybody else.
Can we talk about Dylan Windler?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Theoretical Dylan Windler lives, my friend.
And what a sweet sign it is. Honestly, like, the most encouraging thing watching Dylan Windler over the weekend was the lack of hesitation. Like, he was very decisive that I'm going to pull from three when I have even a little bit of room. And that was not something we saw last season.
He had a little FU energy against Indy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that 4-3 he hit, which was deep. And I almost feel like I can tell whether Windler's going to make it based on how tight the release is. You know, like if he kind of snaps that wrist and holds the hand out, I'm like, oh, that's cash. Like, yeah. And like, I feel like he definitely had some real swagger in how he played that game. And it was just really exciting to see. And then he continued it on and into Chicago. I mean, I too early to say he should just be the backup three. in your mind?
Probably. I mean, he certainly, in a lot of ways, I think should be considered some sort of a front runner, like if he's healthy, because
reality is, reality is he solves the problems that this team has if he's doing what we want him to do, you know? And that's why he probably needs to have the inside track, because you got to give, let him kind of ride through, I mean, health permitting, obviously, but like, you know, it kind of just makes it feel like you have to give him the first crack, because he's the one who solves the most problems for you if it goes well.
Right. And I mean, he is a guy that they've invested in with that first round pick. Like, again, you probably, like, they're going to have to strike a balance and have some compromise throughout this season between trying to win games and trying to develop players, because there is going to be times where, hey, maybe you're not necessarily doing the best option if you're trying to win a game, but there's a long-term focus to it. And I certainly think Okoro starting along with those guys, that would fall into that category. Dylan Windler getting reps over Jetty Osman, which maybe, I don't know if you even want to say Jetty has a higher floor, because the floor can sink in a hurry. But, you know, at least in a more established option. But like, what we liked about
I'll let you get through your point before I ask this next question.
I was about to say, I've started that sentence a couple times and you just keep t-bowing me here, man.
Sorry, like, I'm trying not to. I'm just excited.
You know what? That's fine. It's preseason. It's a perfect time to get excited. And I'm happy that we're excited about the Cavs. But when we talked about Windler last season, we liked everything he was doing outside of the shooting, because he just was not taking those open shots. We like
not
the fact
making
that,
enough, and he was going cold for some stretches too. Like, he was not shooting like a knockdown shooter,
right? And he was hesitant to shoot at times. Like, he would try to slash and pass it off, but the fact that he was such a willing shooter against Indiana, like, all of a sudden the defense started reacting to him. Like, that play where he drove in and kicked it out to Dean Wade, like, that is already creating gravity based off of how well he was shooting and how confidently he was shooting. So the fact that he does do like these team plays where he can put the ball on the floor, find the open man, keep the ball moving, really good rebounder, active hands, good long arms, like there's so many things he does bring to the table that, as long as he's healthy, and he seems healthy, like he's actually moving a lot better than he did last year. Agreed. As long as he's healthy, like, absolutely give him the opportunities, because even when he's not necessarily hitting every shot or doesn't get as many shots like he did against Chicago, he never looks out of place. He never looks like he's being exposed or that he's being targeted or that he's just kind of vanishing. Like, he's just in a lot of ways like a glue guy out there that does a little bit of everything.
So I couldn't agree more. I want you to power rank your preferred ninth men, 1 to 4.
Oh my goodness. So Ricky and Laurie were calling 6 and 7. Love is 8.
Yep.
Dylan Windler would probably be my preferred at 9. I will say Lamar Stevens. I'm going to pander to Jeff Nomina a little bit here. I'm going to say Lamar Stevens if it is the Love and Laurie lineup, because I think as long as Love's kind of in that rotation, you're going to see those lineups. And if you can get Lamar Stevens out there with that kind of spacing, he's just so damn strong. And he's a good finisher around the rim. He's going to get guys in foul trouble. Like, I kind of like giving him that opportunity. But Jetty would be close behind him. Like, I do think, if it's kind of the more traditional lineups or a lineup where you need spacing. What's that?
We are not aligned at all. I'll let you get through it.
Okay.
You got Windler, Lamar, Jetty, and then Dean or Denzel?
Probably Dean at the 3. Like, I like Dean Wade. It's just so hard to get him minutes with the state of the roster and kind of the glut of bigs that are playing well right now. Like, I in theory, I could see him working at the 3, but like, you want to give Okoro enough minutes. You want to give Windler minutes. You want to give Laurie some minutes there to open up opportunities for Kevin Love. Like, I just don't see a functional way to get Dean Wade out there.
What if I told you that I thought Dean Wade wasn't much worse than Lamar defensively and is much better offensively? Like, would you agree with that, even at the 3?
I don't think the mobility is necessarily there. Like, he's just not effective enough as a cutter. Like, I think he's a very good shooter.
Hey, if Lamar had shown me more cutting, I would agree. I think Lamar did a lot of ball handling when he played the three in preseason. And to that end, I actually like Dean even more than maybe Jetty, but it's close. Mm-hmm. It's probably Jetty. But, you know, I think Dean actually, like, every time he's out there, man, I just go, man, this dude knows how to play basketball.
I mean, he's certainly someone that I know you don't dislike.
You don't dislike him. And I know that we both, I mean, I would say we both agree that in the event that Love, Laurie, or Mobley, or even Jarrett are ever, you know, banged up, that, you know, we would, you know, be happy to start the guy or get the guy back in the rotation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, but absent that, it's like, you know, you just kind of, it's hard to find him minutes.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I get the argument for it. I haven't liked him enough when he is cutting it. And to me, that's a bit of a factor, just considering the lineups he'd be out there with. I'm not opposed to it, though. Like, if you do need that spacing, I think he is a viable option. Like, I think he's someone that can almost play the way that Okoro was in the first two preseason games, where he's just kind of standing in the corner a little bit, not being as active. Like, at least you know he's going to knock down those shots. So I do think that there's a value to that. I just think the Cavs should be playing a more active offense. And I just think I give a little bit of a nod to Lamar Stevens, but I get where you're coming from. I don't think it's an outrageous point that you're making.
So the next question I have for you, it was a sneaky two-parter, is would you rather run a 9-man or a 10-man with the roster that you have right now?
I would say 9, but the 10th is kind of a provisional option. Like, if someone's out there not doing the right things, I think you should have the flexibility to pull it. Like, whether it's Garland, Sexton, or Coral, like, throughout the lineup, you need to make sure that there is accountability with this roster, because there actually is valid options to go to. There is veteran options to go to if one of the sex line guards isn't playing well or not making the right decisions. And whether it's as a tool to keep Laurie engaged, to keep Kevin Love engaged, like, I think that 10th man should almost be used in that way. But if it's a game where everything's clicking, the guys are playing well, you have good chemistry, try to keep it to 9, because it's going all the way to 10 almost feels like those football teams that have two quarterbacks that don't really have a quarterback. Like, I know that is the situation with the Cavs backup small forward. We're trying to figure it out. We're trying to get something that works there. But I think my preference is to go 9 and just kind of have that 10th man ready in case someone's not playing the way that they need to.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, ultimately, I think that the play is going to decide this. Like, JB's only going to do this if he's only going to go to that, make that kind of decision if it's made easy for him.
Right.
And in the short term, it's just hard to, it's hard to see him getting all the way there, getting comfortable enough, but, you know, mm-hmm. that, I mean, we'll see. I think Windler has every opportunity to win that job and has kind of the organizational backup, and, you know, I mean, he's the only one a high first round pick was spent on in that group, and I think they're going to give him every opportunity to win it, and I think he's got mm-hmm. a real chance to earn it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Now, when it does come to Okoro, because obviously he's another important part to that small forward rotation, like, what do you want to see from him that you think he can realistically do right now? Like, obviously we want to see him hit more threes, but is there anything beyond kind of what I said of using him, like, sometimes as a screener off ball, using him as a cutter? Like, I was having a conversation with Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs, and he was mentioning, hey, yeah, use him as a screener for Sexton, use him, like, get him in motion, because him being active off ball all of a sudden starts to draw the attention of the defense. He can free up other guys. Is there something that we didn't see from Okoro, let's say against Chicago, because I thought it was a better sampling of what he could do, maybe not the most effective scoring? Is there anything that wasn't there that you'd like to see moving forward?
It's hard, because it's like, you know, what you need is for him to find a way to make an impact, and I don't care how he gets there, you know? Mm. Like, the worst thing is the invisibility, you know, whether it's, you know, running harder in transition to get fed, Finding ways to cut, the cutting lines are just so small with this Tower City lineup. That's the real challenge here, is it's hard to ask him to cut when there's no room to cut. Yeah. So it's like,
it's a lot easier when Mobley's operating out of the high post, that's for sure.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know, man. It's just kind of, I feel like it's to some extent a bit of a losing game to ask him to do it. And I don't have a good solution for him right now other than make more threes and get a little more comfortable, relocating. I think that's one thing that he's not doing a lot of right now that I've found. There's not a lot of relocation happening. It's like, it's either, he spots up and that's just kind of where he is, yeah. But I'm picking Nits, really. It's a tough lineup for him to succeed in right now, especially since the handle hasn't come as far as we had hoped. I think that's starting to look that way, yep. Where you can't just say, Isaac, you can just run some pick and roll to get yourself engaged with Sexland spotting up for you. It just, that hasn't played out that way so far.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And like there is the other coin of, how do you justify giving him tons of ball handling reps to maximize how comfortable he is offensively when he is out there with Garland, Sexton, and Mobley? Like I understand that the Sexland guards haven't performed well offensively throughout the preseason. I'm not as concerned about that. Like if it continues to happen in the regular season and it's a slow start to the season, like that'll be disappointing. But I don't think these guys are going to regress from last season. Like I just don't see that. It would be really, really surprising for me, and ultimately for them, like preseason, like a lot of the guys, is to get back into game shape to experiment with some things. And I think once the lights are on and the games count, you'll see more effectiveness from them. But yeah, like the preseason to me, it's more about finding out about these rotation guys like Okoro, like Lauri Markkanen, like Mobley, like these guys that weren't part of the team last season in a meaningful way. I guess Okoro would be the one exception to that. It's like, as not ideal as the starting lineup is, oh my God, is Okoro good defensively? Like that's what really, to me, makes me want to try this lineup for a while and to see if we can get creative, to see if the coaching staff can find ways to make this work offensively, because I just think the defensive potential of it is so, so damn good. And what, like the way that he's able to get his hands even in passing lanes to disrupt stuff, and you're already factoring in Mobley and Allen, like Chicago is really struggling at times to get some stuff going, and you have really talented offensive players that had their water turned off quite a few times.
Yeah, I mean, it's feeling pretty exciting on that end of the floor. I mean, I just think the size kind of goes a long way. Like, we saw it at the beginning of last season on that end of the ball where, just having Drummond and Nance and Okoro in that front court was pretty freaking good, just deflections and in mobility and in size. We're past the point where being big doesn't help on defense. That was a, 2-year stretch where a couple teams could kill you. But being big still helps. I mean, the Lakers rode it to a title. The Bucks rode it to a title, and, among other things, obviously. But, like, I think the fact of the matter is the floor is just high when the Cavs are able to trot out that kind of lineup defensively. Yeah. There's so much insulation. Really, the spots where they're going to get in trouble with those lineups is in transition. And it's not just because they're big and slow. That might be the kind of the layman's reaction. Really, I think the biggest thing that would cause is their floor balance often sucks. So, yeah. Like when Chicago was just running a layup line on them, it's because they often had 3-4 dudes under the free throw line when the shot went up.
Right, which makes it a lot tougher to get back in transition. Like when they're set, like I think the Cavs half court defense is going to be like legitimately pretty solid this season. Like I think as long as the bigs are healthy, like teams really do have a lot of trouble shooting over Mobley, to shoot over Allen. The fact that they can switch on to wings, like, yeah, they're not switching everything. There's times where they're kind of playing a little bit more of a zone, especially when they're going to three bigs, but they're three mobile bigs with a lot of length to shoot over. Like I understand some of these guys, whether it's Kevin Love or Lauri Markkanen, aren't the strongest defenders in the world. It's just so much damn length to deal with. And it's, again, like I think these lineups would not be as viable. Like I think it would be tougher to explore this as a possibility if you didn't have a big that was as unique as Mobley. And now that he's starting to recognize mismatches on the offensive end of the floor as well, the fact that he's just blowing by bigs and smalls, like he's overpowering smaller wing players. He's getting by Nikola Vucevic, and just like he's doing so many things out there that I think increases the ceiling of what this team can be offensively and what some of these flawed lineups, at least on the offensive end, are capable of doing. Like I think there are paths to this working, and ultimately, like, again, we are only talking about a very small portion of each game, because at the end of the day, you're going to have guys in and out the lineup throughout the course of the night.
Yeah, the defensive floor is high. There's just no way around it. I think you're 100% right that, like, someone like Markkanen, who is by no means a great defender, but when he's just another 7-footer right around you as you're trying to shoot, like, I mean, there's going to be a lot of plays, I feel like, and we've seen this already, where there's just dudes kind of volleyballing the wall up against the basket, just, you know, trying to get any angle to get it up towards the hoop because there's just arms all around them. And I'm pretty excited about this team right now. I will say, maybe my enthusiasm is dampened a little bit on the offensive end, because Isaac's been a little rough and Sexland hasn't really blown me away. But like in the aggregate, I think I'm just as excited as I was going into preseason. Maybe not more, but definitely just as. And that was pretty damn excited. So I don't know. How are you feeling like four games in?
I'm feeling a little more confident. Like what I'm feeling is, like, I guess it's the fact that Evan Mobley looks like a first overall pick. And like
I feel like we might be overstating that just a bit. I think he looks like a really good prospect.
I disagree. Like I just think, like, the physical traits that he's bringing on the table, the stuff he's
capable
of doing.
Yeah, but the production is not first overall pick production. Like, you know, like.
But I think the impact goes beyond the box score stats and the fact that that's already the case. The fact that that's already the case, like, to me, is what makes me so excited. Like that was.
I just want to pump the brakes on that, because if he comes out and shoots 40% his first month of the year, that won't surprise me at all, and that will be bad for, you know, a player of his size. And like, but that, and that, no, that 40% is bad for a 7-footer.
No. Yeah. I'm saying that could
happen. And that's about what he's shooting in preseason. So like,
he's 47%. That's
okay. Sorry.
He's got a little ways to go.
He did better. The Bulls game helped. But like, all I'm saying is I just want to be a little careful with like overselling the impact. Because like, when it really comes, or when he really, because I see a guy who's starting to figure it out. I have not seen a dude who's figured it out to make consistent impact. And when it does come, like, and I'm not saying he won't look like a number one overall pick. I just don't know if he has yet. I'd give him like a B+ for preseason so far. And you know, if I were to, I think looking like a number one overall pick in a stack draft, I'd be wanting to be A+ range. I know we're arguing some small semantics here, but.
I think what you're saying is fair. I guess the better way to frame it is I've seen what I needed to see from Mobley in the preseason. You can tell already, even though the calf spacing isn't ideal, it's a lot better than what he was dealing with at Summer League. He looks more comfortable. He looks stronger.
Looks better.
The rate at which he's picking things up in the game, and the way that the Cavs are integrating new things as he's becoming more comfortable, like, to me, that's really exciting over such a small period of time. We're still talking about a week. They're going to have 5 days off here, basically, or I guess 4 days off until the final preseason game, which I'm hoping is going to be some form of a dress rehearsal so we can see what everyone looks like. Where I might go wrong, if I'm wrong about kind of my confidence in this team and whatnot, is trying to almost count Garland and Sexton as known commodities offensively. Like, I think once the games start to matter, they're going to figure it out. And if that's not the case, if they have a slow start to the season, it's going to be tough because this opening schedule is really, really brutal. And it will be interesting to see if things do go that way, how they respond to that. But, you know, like, at the end of the day, it is important. Like, I just feel more like quiet confidence in this because I understand that growth isn't always linear. You're going to have setbacks as you're trying to progress forward. But I feel better about the state of the roster because we're seeing at least the theory behind it. We're seeing Mobley make that progress. We're seeing Laurie play well in ways that he didn't always showcase in Chicago. Like, we didn't get to see him be this kind of a cutter, slasher, off ball guy as much because there just wasn't the playmaking. Ricky Rubio isn't shooting well at all right now, but you can already tell the impact he makes. Kevin Pangos, we talked about it before. He looks a little small out there, but he does good stuff.
A little smaller than the 6'2 he's listed at, if that is indeed what he's listed at.
Yeah, that's looking like a negative height watch right there. I don't buy him being taller than Garland or Sexton. But, nope. You know, like, six assists out there. Like, he moves the ball well. He's a good shooter. He's got some touch on the floater. Like, there's just more confidence in this roster. And even, like, Jetty Osman looks better than he did last season. Like, he's still going to make the mistakes. He's still going to be Jetty. But there's just enough talent on this roster that I think things can click. It's going to be what we've always said, though. Like, it's going to be on the guards more than anybody else that to dictate the success of the season. And we're not going to find that out until the season actually starts.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see it. I'll say that. I just wanted to, I want to see Sexland really take off and kind of take that last leap we're looking for from both those guards. And mm-hmm. until I see it, I'm just going to be a little antsy because they really are the people who will drive the offensive success of this team.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I mean, I just think back to preseason last year where Sexton didn't shoot well, had a great start. Garland was a little passive, had a great start of the season. Then I think back even further beyond that, like, Sexton had a terrible start to his year too. Like, he was not playing well at all.
We had a whole Sexton's a slow starter thing, and then he had a great start to last year. So I was like, well, guess not.
Right, which is part of my thinking when it comes to Isaac Okoro is just because he is having a slow start and he's having trouble putting things together at the start of the season doesn't necessarily mean he hasn't made progress or that progress isn't coming. It might take some time, and that's why I'd stick in that lineup, even if it cost them a game or two to start the season, because as much as the Cavs want to take a step forward, that step forward only really matters if it's the young guys driving that step. And yes, the players have been talking about playoffs and whatnot, but like on the podcast, we've been talking about, hey, hopefully they can compete for a 10 seed. That means like the 8 seed doesn't always have a 500 record in the East. They're going to lose games along the way. So prioritizing that development, giving these guys the opportunity to make mistakes, not making those knee-jerk reactions to me, is something that like I'm trying to train myself to do, because at the same time that I understand all of that, I'm also incredibly excited because I see the potential, and I really want it to work out. I really want to be right because I love being right, and I feel like I'm right about this group. So I totally get kind of the concern you have with the guards.
It's not concern. I'm not going to be like, oh, they're ready until.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I see it. I don't think you can look at the preseason games and say, oh, yeah, I saw I what I needed need, to see.
If this everyone's is going been, to be you know, everyone and their mother's telling me Star Terrence coming for Garland, I just got to see it.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And hopefully he has the assertiveness of Ricky Rubio, because Rubio's been out there. He's been gunning a little
That's
bit.
That's some Olympic confidence there, Rick.
He's not hitting a lot of it, but he's gunning out there. And
I don't mind it.
I don't mind it either. Like, again, it's honestly, it's a little similar once again to Okoro. Like, if you have the open shot, take it. Please, please, please just take those open shots, because it's going to create some honesty from the defense. You can't pass up open looks and be a successful offense in today's NBA. But you just can't.
Nope. And I'm excited to see this team continue to take shape as we move forward.
Were there any other standouts from I almost said summer league from preseason so far for you?
Not really, no. I think Dean looked good. I think Dylan's looked good. I think Jetty's looked mediocre. Pangos looks a little small to be a long-term player in the league, but as a third stringer, I'm fine with it. No, I think we hit everyone I needed to hit.
Alrighty then. Well, you know what? I'm a little discouraged by your lack of faith in Pangos or Bangos as he knocks down those threes. If he hit that three to end the game, how excited would you have been about him?
I would have been so happy for him, but not any more excited about him. I'm not excited about him. Just like, he looks small.
Well, you know, there's a very old saying when it comes to podcasting about the NBA. If you are talking about theoretical game winners in the preseason, it's time to wrap up the podcast. So that's what we should probably do here. I want to thank everybody for listening, everyone tuning in live on YouTube. If you want to support the show, you can do so by liking, subscribing on the Cavs YouTube channel. Click the little bell so you get notified when we go live. If you're listening via podcast, you can support us the old-fashioned way. Leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cavs.